get the kids back in here, and
I think you know, we can chat a little about what Suzanne's going to be talking about, because it's India for the daring adventurer, and you know, India will exhaust and intrigue, exacerbate and inspire you. Yet it's a matchless experience for the globetrotter that we're going to talk to.
Well, I mean, here's a gal that, you know, traveling as a woman, which is, you know, it's not as easy as one would think.
Right.
And gone off for, what, the best part of a month to India, and traveled to all parts of it. And not only that, but her article is and photographs are just beautiful. And I would think, if it's not up at the moment, it will be soon on our website, and you can just go to www.ttrn.com and click on Destination Worldview and scroll down to her article. And Suzanne is just really a super writer and a super gal, and hopefully we'll have her here with us in just a moment, and she can bring you the information easier than we can. And here she is. Marcus, let's go to Suzanne, who's on the line.
Okay. Good morning, Suzanne, and thank you for your perseverance. We're down to one line. Every time it rains in this area, we get trouble with our telephone lines, and it makes life very interesting.
And we've had lots of rain. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
It's wonderful, thank you.
We were just telling people all sorts of wonderful things about you, which unfortunately you didn't get to hear. But you trust me.
Playbacks are for.
That we certainly did. The article on India is brilliant, and let's just start out by telling the audience and sharing with them how, first of all, you decided to go off on this, and for a month no less, and traveling as a woman. Not that we put that down any, but I mean, traveling for a woman in some countries is fine, but in some of the others, it's quite not as easy as a man who is not quite as noticeable as a woman. And I don't know why I said that, but I did.
Well, I guess the backstory is that India is one of those places that sort of captured my imagination for many, many years. I expected it to be a challenging destination, and I also knew that I wanted to have an extended period of time in which to take that trip. So I didn't want to go over there and do, you know, 2 weeks and, you know, have to hustle around. As it was, I still ended up hustling around
right.
city every couple of days. But
right.
I wanted to have the leisure, let's say, of a little longer period of time to travel. And the truth is, it's a hard destination for a lot of people to wrap their arms around. I really didn't have any comrades or friends who were willing to make the trip with me. So, you know, owing to my profession, it's just always been my idea that, well, I'm not going to let that stand in the way.
Good for you.
So I certainly did talk with some Indian expats who are living here in Atlanta, where I live, and they encouraged me that, you know, go ahead and make the trip and, you know, set up a little bit of an itinerary and then allow yourself some free time. And everyone warned me about how challenging it would be as a woman, but the truth is, other than being sort of stared at a lot and being asked repeatedly if I was married, where was my family, which, you know, it's a very family-oriented culture, I didn't find any difficulties. It's a highly religious country, and, you know, violence, other than maybe just some petty sorts of things, are not very, they're sort of frowned upon. So I didn't find my movements to be at all compromised as a woman. I just got used to being stared at, and it was kind of funny because I was very, very happy, maybe for the first time in my life, that I wasn't a tall, leggy blonde. Because I think the staring would have been tenfold. So as a short, curly, ethnic-looking, dark-haired gal, it was okay.
Well, and once you told them you didn't cook curry, probably the proposals diminished.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, just getting on into it. Now, did you find India, the point is that more or less what you expected? Or?
Right. Well, you know, I went at a very interesting time in the country historically, because the tsunami had just devastated the southern part of the country, and I arrived 2 days later into Bombay. So Bombay was not affected in terms of its topography or geography, but much like our country had a malaise over it.
Right.
After 9/11, the entire country of India was truly in mourning. It was palatable. You could really feel the sense of injury and sadness and hurt among the people. And it was very touching because when you would, you know, talk with any of the people in the hospitality business, whether they were, you know, bellmen at hotels or waiters or waitresses at local restaurants or tour guides, it was evident that there was a real rush to donate what little they could with their limited salaries to help in the recovery effort.
That's interesting. Yeah. When there's so much, you know, there's so many poor in the country.
Yes, exactly. So I think that was the first thing that was striking to me, you know, upon setting foot on the, you know, on the subcontinent there.
Right.
I guess beyond that, I had expected India to be, as I said earlier, challenging. And by that, I think I mean, yes, I expected to run into a high level of poverty and squalor and sort of chaos. And it turned out all of that is true and then some. I don't know if you can really prepare yourself for the stark reality that is India. It's just so, I mean, I've certainly traveled in developing countries.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This doesn't bear much resemblance to the rest of Asia or to Mexico, other parts of Africa. It's just everything is kind of on turbo. In India, the sounds are louder, the streets are more crowded, the smells are more pungent. It's almost sensory overload, I guess you might say.
Right, and yet there is some amazing history, some amazing architecture, and all the rest of it. But
absolutely, I mean the truth is. You know, it's like that's the ante to get into the country. You've got to put up with some chaos to be rewarded with incredible experiences in everything you touch, whether it's, you know, the grandeur of the Taj Mahal at dusk, or whether it's finding a Jain temple, you know, nestled in a hilly mountain, or whether it's an incredible meal of lamb curry, or whether it's a beautiful silk that you find at the marketplace. I mean, you've got to kind of dig for those experiences, but I think the reward is there, absolutely.
Your photo of the marketplace is terrific.
Thank you. I felt like I could have kept my finger constantly on the shutter. You know, it was there were just pictures everywhere you turned. And the most magnificent and I think the most impactful sight in India is the color. The women are bejeweled, and they are garbed in peacock colors, you know, bright
colors,
gem colors. And it's against a very dusty, often landscape, you know, it's just such a visual relief to the eye. It's such a delight to the eye. So, yeah, you just take picture after picture after picture because there's just always something new unfolding.
In fact, in looking at this photo of this marketplace with the produce, I when I printed it out this morning, I don't know. I think my computer didn't know which way to start and which way to go. There are so many colors.
Talk about sensory override in a photo. That one is amazing.
Now, do you find that? What about the British, the former British influence there. Do you still see signs of that today?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in the larger cities, you have the old colonial buildings that are still there. They're in rather a state of disarray at this point, owing to a combination of sort of lack of funds to refurbish the physical structures themselves, and also some of the really dire effects of pollution.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you still see those buildings. They have a sort of a frayed charm to them, you know, not unlike that you see in the French Quarter in New Orleans, a little bit down at its heels, but you can tell when it was in its prime.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yep.
there was gorgeousness there. I also think that the thing that's also funny is, you know, it sounds almost pedestrian to say, but, you know, you don't expect sometimes to hear our English language spoken the way it's spoken from the mouth of an Indian native. It just sounds different.
Sounds very different.
It has a certain elegance to it.
It does indeed. I can't do that imitation, but some can do it very well.
Nor can I, nor would I. And you also see, you know, there's certainly a cricket is still played in almost every city.
Right.
And cricket is a huge, huge sport in India, and something they feel, you know, it's a rabid spectator sport. So people are very, you know, enthusiastic about that, and it's beautiful to see that the contrast of the dark skin against the white
greens of the
certain elegance
yep,
to that sport.
Yep.
And of course, that's one of the big carryovers from the British influence of cricket. Needless to say,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned. You mentioned the Oberoi experience, and it's kind of interesting because Bicky Oberoi, in our younger days, was a good friend of mine when I was living in the UK, and you know, I've met the family, and they were always a first-class family, and they always were great entertainers, so it's no surprise to me to find out that it was a marvelous experience.
I couldn't have asked for a better place to lay down my head every night. The Oberoi Hotel is by leaps and bounds the leading hotelier in that part of the world. And they have, I mean, I've done, as you guys know, I've done a tremendous amount of traveling, but I didn't realize there was such a thing as seven-star resorts.
Without even a cloud over a star.
They have gorgeous, gorgeous properties that I found did a wonderful job of sort of buffeting me from the frantic pace that I participated in touring in each of the places I was all day, every day. And then I came back to this sort of oasis of gorgeousness and calmness, and yet it didn't feel stiff or formal. There's just a lovely way about the people of India in terms of extending hospitality. They're known worldwide for hospitality. And, you know, certainly at the level of the Oberoi's properties, you know, that's just enhanced by the fact that you're in, you know, absolutely magnificent space,
public
and private.
That's a nice feeling.
All right. We're running out of time because we've got another guest coming in. As I say, we only have one line in. But people will be able to go to your article through our website at www.ttrn.com and read it and see the photos and just get the feel for the beautiful way you wrote it. We thank you very, very much for calling in today and look forward to chatting with you again.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. You're listening to Talk and Travel, and when we get back, hopefully we'll have our next guest on our one phone line, and we're running tight for time, so we'll take a quick break.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way.